Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for staying with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you, as always. You're going to be glad you're with me because one of the smartest guys I know is on our show right now. Chuck Cadlick, Charles W. Cadlick, is the author of Dow 100,000, Fact or Fiction. He's a former managing director at J&W Seligman, and he's now working, following his own dream, just as you and I are doing. He's become a small business owner, and he's going to be focusing on that 100%, and I'm very excited about that. I can't wait to see the impact he's going to have on Main Street, and it will be an impact. And I'm glad to say he's our good friend all the way back to 98 as a member of our Brain Trust. Chuck Cadlick, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. It's great to be back.
It's good to have you back. Welcome to Small Business.
Yeah, I love it. Although I'm on vacation right now.
Yeah.
It's the last one I probably get, right?
That you are exactly right. You know, Chuck, though, I'm down to working now that I've been in my business for this month 21 years. I'm only working half days now.
6 to 6?
Exactly. I get to choose. I get to choose which 12 hours I work. After 21 years, I'm down to half days.
Yeah.
Hey Chuck, something that's going on has been going on now for the last 24 months or so, a little over 2 years probably, on Main Street, Main Street small businesses, is here's what we know. We know that our world has changed in the last 2 years. And a lot of opportunity, a lot of equity, has been lost. A lot of anguish has been given to us. A lot of problems, a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, a lot of having to relearn. A lot of stuff has happened in the last 2 years. We know that. And the other thing we know is we didn't cause any of that. And we're looking around and we're saying, okay, we're not vindictive people. And maybe we're not looking for somebody to blame, although that would be understandable. But we're looking around and we're saying, we would like to know who caused it. We would like to know what caused this financial meltdown, and why did it happen, and how do we stop it from happening again? I think that's a refrain that's coming out of Main Street. What do you think, Chuck?
Well, I agree with everything you said, and the sources of the problem are somewhat sophisticated, complex, and for the most part hidden from view, and certainly not the part of the current administration's conversation. In that they're ignoring the government, totally ignoring the federal government's role,
right,
in creating this crisis.
Because the things that part of the crisis was created by things the government did, the Congress did, that the Fed did, and others. And and the attitude about spending and government intervention. And you're saying that they are continuing to do some of those things that created the problem.
Well, let's look at least this is my view, and people have many different views on this, but I'll take you through my first.
And when we talk about politicians here, folks, Chuck and I are not talking Republican, Democrat. We're talking political class here, right, Chuck?
That's correct.
Go ahead.
First, we had the Community Reinvestment Act, which encouraged. It started in the 70s. The impulse was absolutely great. There was a practice of redlining poor communities in our cities, and this bill was done to force banks to lend more in those communities.
Right.
Now, the alternative, of course, would have been to start a bank. If you really thought that a community was being underserved, you could have done what the founder of Bank America did and found a bank and served that community and demonstrated that these other people were missing the boat. But
right.
That they passed a law that forced banks to make loans they might not otherwise have made.
All banks, yep.
All banks.
Mm-hmm.
And then that started as a rather modest program, but then began to grow exponentially in the 90s. The next piece is that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they're two quasi-governmental organizations,
Right. Government GSOs, government-sponsored organizations.
Enterprises.
Yeah. Enterprises,
so
right.
But that SEs. Means, so the government had an implicit, then implicit, now explicit guarantee of the debt they issued, which allowed them to borrow at competitive, at lower rates than they otherwise could have. And the idea was that that benefit would be passed on in the form of lower mortgages to homeowners. Well, in fact,
and they, because they were buying up the mortgages from the originators at the point of sale.
That's right. And in the early part of the 2000s, the Congress began to pressure Fannie and Freddie because they weren't doing enough to support lower-income individuals to buy houses, that is what we now call subprime mortgages.
Right.
And so what happened is that Fannie and Freddie began to ask for and demand more of those mortgages be created, and they put up $1 trillion.
Right. Hold on to that thought, Chuck. We're going to come right back to this, folks. We're also going to get into, I'm going to ask Chuck to explain to us what a derivative is, what a synthetic CDO is, what naked short selling is, and the part that those played in all of this. Stay with us, too. We'll be right back.
Remember mine.
Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks very much for staying with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you check it out when you get a chance. Lots of stuff there to help you with your small business, the one you're starting, the one you're growing, the one you're selling, or the one you're buying, whatever you got, whatever's going on your mind, whatever you've got happening today in your small business cycle. We've got something that you can read or listen to, ask a question. Check out my blog, subscribe to my newsletter, check out our Brain Trust members like our good friend Charles W. Cadlick, who is with us right now. Chuck is a longtime member of our Brain Trust, and so you can find an incredible body of work that he's deposited with us since 1998. We consider people who joined our Brain Trust in 98 to be founding members of the Brain Trust, and we couldn't do without him. Chuck is the author of Dow 100,000 Factor Fiction. And Chuck, I've asked Chuck to explain to us, you know, how we got into this mess and how do we, and some of the key ingredients of this financial mess that we've just come through that we're trying to get ourselves out of right now that's cost small business owners so much over the last couple of years. And I want to get into some of these issues that are being debated right now, especially with the Bear Stearns debate that's going on right now, that lawsuit. And Chuck, as we went to the break, you were talking to us about how the mortgage industry got upside down because Fannie Mae was demanding more and more mortgages. The Fed was feeding the economy with a lot of liquidity.
Right.
We had securitization. Wall Street was taking these mortgages that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were buying and securitizing them and demanding more of those. And the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were demanding more mortgages at the marketplace. Community Reinvestment Act was putting extra pressure on the banks to loan more money to people who couldn't afford it, and this all became the perfect storm, didn't it?
Well, it did, and markets normally actually are self-regulating because, you know, there has to be a borrower,
right?
But in this case, the federal government backed this government-sponsored enterprise with its full faith and credit, and said, "Go make loans."
Yeah.
Well, look, capital markets know how to respond to a client with $1 trillion, right?
That's they make a product.
That is a big customer with money good.
Yep.
And so, of course, Wall Street responded. Now, there's one last piece, which is because why did this all happen all around the world? And it's because the Bank for International Settlements, headquartered in Switzerland, in a multilateral, that is major countries of the world, got together and decided how to assess bank capital so that all banks had to follow the same rules around the world. As it turns out, those rules were flawed. They used something called value at risk. It's a mathematical idea, and it allowed banks to leverage more than they otherwise would have. And two is, it really put an emphasis on owning AAA securities in your portfolio. So banks had an enormous incentive in terms of making money to make sure they had AAA securities. So you have the Fed creating another bubble with easy money, people rotating out of stocks because of the 01-02 experience, looking for the next hot thing. That was real estate. Then you have the federal government putting up $1 trillion and you have somebody in the middle trying to make this all work, because that's what capital markets do.
And
they had to create AAA securities.
And then we also have to throw in the rating agencies who dropped the ball too, didn't they?
Right. And all ratings were more than happy to bless you. So it was an instrument that had been around since the late 80s, but called a collateralized debt obligation. What was this?
CDO.
So they created a special entity, a separate entity, which would buy up these mortgages, but it wouldn't just resell the package, a well-diversified portfolio. What it did is it cut them into tranches, and it said, well, there's a junior tranche, a mezzanine tranche, and a senior tranche. And the senior tranche,
so you sort of
was
had
money good. Was money good? They got if there. In other words, if they had the last 20%, the first 80% of any losses went to the juniors and the mezzanine, and they got the last 20%, and that was AAA.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
and so, that's a little bit in the weeds, but the point is that they were splitting they were securitizing these mortgages, and then they were selling them around the world to these various groups like governments, pension funds,
everywhere. Banks
were buying them. Yeah,
the problem. Banks bought a lot of them. That's why it was a global crisis, because it impacted
because when it was determined.
Capital.
When it was determined that some of these AAAs were not really AAA, that's when the faith, the confidence dropped. And you've talked to us the last time about how that worked. So, but what is a collateralized debt obligation, CDO, right?
Right.
What is a synthetic CDO?
Okay, well, this is what Goldman Sachs created in this confusion committing fraud. So, the synthetic CDO looks at mortgages that are trading in the market, whether you can price them daily. And it doesn't actually own them. But what it does is some people say, we bet those are going to be money good. And somebody else says, we would like to buy that insurance. In other words, if they go wrong, you have to pay us.
So it's a phantom market on top of a market that actually has collateral.
Well, I mean, I think of it as an insurance policy.
Is it not like, and I heard a senator say this, and I thought it wasn't a bad analogy. He said, isn't this like you and me not owning the horse, but going and betting on the horse? And if you think one horse is going to win, I think another horse is going to win, and that adjusts the odds.
Yes, or it's like owning insurance on a house or buying fire insurance on a house that you don't own.
Yeah, exactly.
And you find somebody
and there's a law against that, because you can only buy insurance on things that you have a vested interest in.
That's right.
But in the stock market, it's not, and on Wall Street, it's not like that, is it?
That's right, because you can't torch a mortgage.
Right. Well,
but it creates.
I don't know about that.
Because of moral hazard. That's why it has to do with houses, because of moral hazard.
Right. Hold on to that thought. We'll take quick breaks. I'm going to ask Chuck some more questions about this, folks, and try to get some resolution after these messages. Tintel, stay with us. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for staying with me. Chuck Cadlick is our guest. Charles W. Cadlick is the name of the book, Dow 100,000 Factor Fiction. And Chuck, you're telling us about, we're getting to the heart of why this financial meltdown happened, but some of these financial products that contributed to the collapse,
yeah.
which was a year and a half ago, basically officially in September of 2008. Some of these instruments that got us that were so prevalent and so were being developed so much that they wind up helping to collapse the system. Synthetic CDOs, collateralized debt obligations, what they are. Synthetic CDOs are where you don't actually own anything. You're just betting on long or short on whether a certain equity is going to be successful or not. What is naked short selling?
Naked short selling is when you sell a security you don't own.
Yeah.
That's what it means.
Is that a dangerous thing to do?
Well, is that if you have for you as the seller, you have to have the collateral to back that up. You can lose a lot of money. You know, if you short a stock at $10, you don't own it, and it goes to 20, you know, you've lost $10 a share.
You got a capital call. I mean, you got a margin call.
Right. Right, so so brokers are very rigorous about the collateral you have when you short a security, even if you own it, So actually, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. I made a mistake. Excuse me. Let me say it again. A naked short is when you short the stock and the broker hasn't borrowed the stock on your behalf.
Ah.
Where there's no lender of the stock. So of course, when you short a stock, you don't own it. Mm-hmm. I made a mistake, so excuse me for that.
So naked short selling is one more level.
Well, what happens is you go in and you call your broker and you say, okay, I want to short the stock. You have the account set up, everything's fine. And he has to locate someone who's willing to lend the stock.
And so you're saying naked short selling is a transaction that doesn't even touch an actual piece of equity.
That's right. There's no lender on the other side.
And so is that not a dangerous transaction? That makes no sense to somebody on Main Street.
Well, it's prohibited.
But has that been happening?
In equity markets, and the stock market is prohibited. Look, on the collateralized debt obligation, the synthetics, it's like writing an insurance policy. And what happens is banks were getting a premium. They were getting paid a premium, like an insurance company, saying that these securities would not would be money good at the end of the maturity.
Right.
And the person on the other side was saying, gee, you know, I'd like to buy some insurance against a default. Now, that has a legitimate market function.
Right. There,
but some people also said, well, hey, that's a really clever way to bet against the mortgage market.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to the extent that actually impacts prices in the broader market, it sends a price signal to other market players that, hey, maybe these securities are more risky than we thought they were.
Right.
So I think you got to be very careful when you begin to try to think you're smarter than markets.
Well, see, that's what concerns me. See, this is the essence of the reason I wanted you here, Chuck. I wanted you to explain some of these elements for us, like as you've done. But my question is, as much of a Main Street guy as I am, and as much as I want somebody to pay for what's happened, and I want to think that the people who created this problem, this collapse that we had, to pay for it and for it to hurt them, the way it's hurt some of us, I also know that I don't want the capital markets to be taken over by the government, and that's what I fear is happening right now. What do you think?
Well, let me give you an example of what you just said. Goldman Sachs, one of the criticizing Goldman Sachs now for shorting the mortgage market, but that's why Goldman Sachs didn't go broke. Because it bought that insurance.
But did they not create a product that was basically designed to fail, and
then they
shorted that product?
No, that's not
some
true.
I have heard some people say that they did.
I know that's the headline. That's the political act.
I talked to another guy whose opinion I respect, and he said that
it's a political accusation,
okay,
not a market accusation. The fact is, Goldman was the middleman. There were buyers.
Yep.
There were people who wanted that premium income, and it had full disclosure on exactly what was in that synthetic portfolio. And there was somebody on the other side. There had to be someone on the other side.
It seemed
had a different view, or it never would have happened. In other words, when you buy a stock, you know there's somebody who sold it.
Chuck, it seems to me, as we wrap up, it seems to me though, the farther you get away from a when you have a transaction. The farther a transaction gets away from the underlying asset, the more dangerous it seems to me that it is.
I think it's potentially more dangerous. I think we have to be very, very careful and skeptical that bureaucrats, and who, by the way, missed Madoff,
right,
were watching pornography, this whole thing was going down.
I'm more afraid of bureaucrats than I am afraid of Wall Street.
That's right. Can actually manage this whole game on a real-time basis.
I agree with you 100%. Thanks, Chuck, for being here. Good job today. See you next time. Chuck Cadillac, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'll see you tomorrow. Stay with me.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.